Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the Corlin Economics Report of politics. Jim McKinney and I are going to talk about an article that I personally, and I know that I thank Jim very much for bringing this article to my attention, because I think it's one of the best articles that's ever been written on the COVID mandates. The name of the article is called COVID-19 Vaccine Mandates Fail the Jacobson Test. There's a gorgeous picture that we did, by the way, put the article along with the pictures that were included in the article on the site. And the picture that's at the beginning of the article states, has a woman holding up a banner stating, essential workers are essential, the shot is not. Boy, isn't that the truth. Now, the authors of this particular article bring out the fact that Americans are a freedom-loving lot. It's our founding ethos, and we've defended it across the world on numerous occasions. They are very, very, the authors are very, very explicit in stating that. And that is right now why the mandates that Biden is trying to push through are probably not going to make it. Now, the article, I'm just going to bring out one point that came out at the very beginning, and I'm going to turn it over to Jimmy. That what came out at the very beginning is, and I'll read this, it's a quote, based on the scientific knowledge and medical experience acquired over the last 2 years, it's time for a significant reconsideration of how to best integrate freedom, the freedom that we talked about earlier, with the genuine requirements of public health in the service of the common good. Boy, that sentence just grabs me and pulls me right into the article. Jimmy, take it away.
Yeah, so the article is written by an epidemiologist from Yale. He's a professor of epidemiology, the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health at Yale School of Public Health, with an MD from University of California and a PhD from University of Chicago. The co-writer is Gerald Bradley. He's a professor of law at Notre Dame, teaching legal ethics and constitutional law. These two gentlemen take the justification for mandatory vaccines used in the courts, which comes from the 1902 to 1904 smallpox pandemic, and someone that went to the Supreme Court to stop the vaccine mandates. What they do is they break down the justification for the smallpox vaccination and then compare that to the COVID-19 vaccination mandates. And they do a phenomenal job of showing that there is no justification for the current mandates, and that the courts and the Supreme Court should relook the entire foundations of Jacobson in relation to COVID-19 before things get out of hand. Make a very, very strong case.
Now, Jimmy, what I would bet is that I would bet they do that, and they do it so effectively because so many things have happened in the area of knowledge, i.e. scientific knowledge and medical experience over the last couple of years, correct?
Yeah, one of the key elements in their argument is in the Jacobson case in the Supreme Court, there had been about 100 years of experience with the smallpox vaccine. So that there was a very, very small minority of medical opinions that said that it could be dangerous. And the fact is that it had been actually proven over time that it had a very positive effect, and there was not that type of danger. But the danger of smallpox itself had a case fatality rate of 18%. Now, you compare that to COVID-19, which is less than 1%, there's a clear difference in the justification in that argument.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm reading one thing here that I think is interesting. It's the first thought that came to my mind. Number one, these guys are eminently qualified. We're talking about doctors. We're talking about epidemiologists. We're talking about attorneys, et cetera, et cetera. And what these guys from Yale, University of California at Berkeley, and also Notre Dame, among others, are saying is they're calling the COVID-19 vaccine mandates, quote, draconian and unjustified. You don't get much more forceful than that, James.
No, and some of their points are that the justification that the court in the Jacobson case over 100 years ago, 115 years ago, they used four basic principles to use justification for the best interest. You know, does individual liberty override the harm to others? Was the vaccine mandate arbitrary or oppressive? Was the vaccine reasonably required for public safety? And was there justified, medical arguments that it was not, valuable or that it was dangerous? In each one of these cases, we're seeing the justification being completely undermined relative to Jacobson with COVID-19, with Pfizer, biotech, and Moderna vaccinations. We know that everybody is quite aware now, finally, that even with vaccinations, you can still get it, you can still spread it, yep. And as we know in the case of Colin Powell, you can still die from it.
That's right.
The vaccine.
Let me just stress one thing. One thing, and I'm going to let you go, and then I won't even open my mouth. The one thing I want to stress is you mentioned in the prior disease, you had a mortality rate of almost, not quite, 20%. Now you've got a mortality rate equal to probably the common cold or the common flu, less than 1%.
Yeah, there's no question. That's a very important distinction because many things that we have a 1% mortality rate. We're certainly, with heart disease, with, obesity, with diabetes, the issues that are actually connected very much with COVID-19. And the most important factor is your age. So this is specific. And of course, when they were talking about smallpox, that's a general, that kills a vast, swath of the population. So, yeah, does it make public safe is an important question. Was it reasonably required for public safety? What we've seen is people with the most areas with the highest vaccination rates are not stopping the vaccine at all. I mean, not stopping the COVID virus at all.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Yeah.
So, and then we're talking about, is there justifiable medical information that shows that maybe it's at risk? Well, when you look at the CDC's own in the VIRS reporting, which is the actual negative consequences of getting the vaccine, you're seeing numbers that are staggeringly high, with close to 20,000 deaths attributed partially to COVID-19 vaccinations, with 50% of those deaths within 3 days of taking the vaccines. That's far and above than any other vaccine and all other vaccines combined, as well as nearly a million adverse reactions from the vaccine. So there's justifiable reasons to say medically, this is a potential risk here, and you've got to have a good cause to force someone to take something like
that. Boy, ain't that the truth. Jimmy, we've got to take a real quick commercial break, but this is important enough. I want to record the next segment, not necessarily immediately, but certainly before our deadline. We've got to have it up on the satellite, the show, by 7 o'clock on Friday. You guys, stick around. Jim and I will be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Jimmy, thanks for taking some extra time to go on with this second segment. I think this article is so damn important, written by three highly qualified guys, educated at University of California, I believe at Berkeley, educated at Yale, educated at Notre Dame, attorneys and physicians. They give some very compelling arguments that are very, very contra-mandate. You want to state some of those and give your opinions?
Well, so they used the Jacobson test, which gave those 4 points that I mentioned in the previous segment. And when they counter them, they're basically saying, look, you know, individual liberty does not allow you to hurt someone else, right? You can't at your own expense or your own benefit hurt someone else. That's understandable. And they also believe the government has, in the case of dire need, the government has the opportunity to seize property or to do things in the benefit of the nation. And that's important. You know, there are occasions when that's necessary. The draft is a very important issue in order to save the nation from, you know, an invasion or a war. Those are types of things that are justifiable. But in this particular case, we're talking about a compelling interest that is actually unproven. We know that there's about 500,000 annual deaths from tobacco is one of their points. So we haven't had that many people die from COVID-19. Yet the federal government has never curtailed tobacco use in a meaningful way, just other than public, information campaigns. There's not enough to trigger a compelling interest for that, as well as alcohol abuse and a number of other things, or eating fat-rich foods, for instance, for heart disease, which is one of the largest killers in America.
Yep.
So the compelling interest is gone. So the individual liberty, that's one of the points. Go ahead.
Yep. It's really, really, really gratifying to me to have an article like this up on our website, because I think this gives the most logical explanation for disagreeing with Joe Biden in terms of the consequences of no mandates. You know, it's interesting the fact that we, as we talked earlier in the week during another daily editorial, we talked, and this is not a daily editorial, this is a segment on the weekend radio show, obviously. But I think it's very, very interesting that such an interest was taken in a point that the article brought up at the very beginning, and that is that America is very much a freedom-loving country, and Americans don't believe that in all instances the federal government can tell them everything that they have to do. And they bring out the fact that this particular lack of action is absolutely essential to the American psyche. Go ahead, bud.
Yeah, so one of the second points that they make, in the original case in Jacobson with the Supreme Court, was the vaccine is not the arbitrary oppressive. But what we're finding is that, in fact, this is a new technology. It hasn't been tested fully. And there's not the science to back it up. But the fact is, people are being forced and they're losing their jobs, certainly federal government employees, as well as people with over 100 workers. And a number of places have fired individuals because they wouldn't take the vaccine. We see that. And then we don't know, though, and one of the issues is it's not oppressive. That they say is, this is particular arbitrary and oppressive because they don't take in consideration of natural immunity at all. And I think that's something, again, that we've made the point on this show, that without judging natural immunity or actually looking at putting as much effort into therapeutics, that you're missing something and you have to question why they're forcing that. So the legal argument is this doesn't make any sense to continue because, these are oppressive, and there are other things that you need to consider before you force people into this situation. A third justification that they make is reasonably required for public safety. And I mentioned earlier, we know that you get the vaccination, which is no longer a vaccination. It's just an inhibitor. It's not really not doing what a vaccination should do, protect you completely from the disease. It actually just stops you from having severe, apparently, from severe cases in hospitalization, potentially death. But in fact, we know that people still die with the vaccines. We know that people still pass the information with the, or pass the disease with the vaccine. So, and then of course, the last point that they make is that, you know, is there medical history that shows that it's safe and effective? There's no long, we have only been a year with these vaccines. And what we're seeing with these VIRS reporting is a major problem with that case. So, four key points in the Jacobson Supreme Court case are basically completely undermined in this article and very effectively put out there for people to understand. I think, you know, when you start walking further and you start looking at the potential of lockdowns and shutdown, taking away people's jobs, you're crossing the line into an area of authoritarianism that hasn't, the world has not seen since, you know, the communist powers. And of course, we're seeing it in China in many cases. But, it's very disturbing. Neil Oliver, GBN, a Great Britain news network, a British commentator, he does a video just recently, and I'll tell you, that video is incredibly powerful because he talks through the segregation of individuals and the policies that are out there in Australia. And he uses Austria as a prime example where they are forcing everyone in February to have the vaccine, everyone in the country. And right now, if you do not have the vaccine, you cannot shop, you cannot go into a restaurant or anything if you don't have the vaccine. Yet, if you're an employee of that restaurant or that bar or that shop, you are forced to go to work. So how does that make any sense? How can you force someone to go to work without the vaccine, but then at the end of the day, they can't go back and buy from that shop or eat in that restaurant? And this is the absolute scary lengths that some governments are willing to go to think to control something that they cannot and will not be able to control. This is not controllable. And it's proven that they have failed in numerous ways. They continue to lie and force people into this pressure with no real justification other than expansion of power and succumbing to financial interests, certainly of the pharmaceutical companies, but also globalist objectives.
You know, Jimmy, I got to tell you, it's a great way to force the will of the government on the individual. And in the United States, I firmly believe, having lived here for, 78 years now, I firmly believe that that's an impossibility. You're not going to be able to do it. People, as this article brought out at the very beginning, are too stubborn to do something like that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back after that top of the hour news.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the KE Report, Corlin Economics Report. This is all politics. We're switching over to politics almost every day of the week now. Some things going on in D.C. that are pretty important. Number one, coughing fit by the president and everybody saying, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And the administration announces that he is COVID tested every single day. This COVID is really getting bad. We're going to be talking about that with a guy who's been through it, who almost died, my friend John Huber. Jimmy and I will be talking with him in the next segment. Let's start out with something that is, I think, really important right now. COVID is important, but the economy is more important. Jimmy, let's talk about the numbers.
Yeah, so this morning the November jobs report came out, and the expectations were roughly 550,000. They came out at 210,000. That is pretty dismal, less than half. That's a pretty bad sign, especially as you're going into the November hiring for Christmas sales. So that's a problem. And I think the administration doesn't really have an answer for it, because the expectations, you know, they were revised up in the October report. September report was really bad. And, you know, all their expectations here are being shut down. Their promises, their actual media hype and statements that the economy is doing real good are being undermined by the facts. That's unfortunate that they continue to push that and don't make decisions that actually will help benefit the economy. When you're forcing workers out of their job, when you're mandating vaccines for people and they were forced out of work, and of course you continue this lockdown effort in many places, it's going to have a negative impact. I talked about it before, and now we're starting to see the results.
Well, whoever's behind this thing, and somebody's definitely behind it, is doing a masterful job, in my opinion, knocking down the United States. Had dinner last night with some friends at an Italian restaurant that is barely staying open. They simply can't hire people. They put out help wanted signs. I have never seen as many help wanted signs in an area as I'm seeing in our area right now, Jim. And the help wanted signs are not being answered at all, not even close. People don't want to work.
You know, I think there's a lot of people that are still afraid. The media is still hyping the COVID. And, you know, the reality is it has a less than, 1% fatality rate. And the vast majority of the people that are hurt from it are at the end of their life, very elderly, over 70. For the rest of us, that very little problem, but the media continues to hype it. The administration continues to hype it. People are afraid. And also, over the last year and a half, 2 years, since this has begun, the fear and the panic has put a tremendous amount of depression on people. They're afraid of what's happening out there. A lot of them don't want to go to work. I was at an economic forecast breakfast, and one of the chief economists for Wells Fargo's headquarters out of New York gave a presentation talking about the numbers, talking about the potential for the economy. And basically the news is all bad. It's all bad. And of course she was not even considering, and she was asked at the end of the presentation whether or not, they've factored in the Build Back Better budget from the Biden regime. And the reality was, she says, no, we didn't really factor that in because, we probably don't think it's going to come out the way that it's supposed to be coming out. But when you're, at the White House telling people that this, $3 trillion spending spree isn't going to cost anybody anything, or that the $1.7 trillion infrastructure budget's not going to cost anybody anything, and then the government accounting offices comes out and says, no, it is. You're just becoming just a flat out liar. So the confidence in the economy is low. People are depressed because of this continuation of the lockdowns, the mask mandates. The media is manipulating people with fear over something that is really not, it's not the end of the world. And of course, then they push that Omicron variant and frightening even more. And then you've got an administration that's up there falsifying information and lying on a routine basis to try to appease, to try to look and massage the information to make them look good. This is a real recipe for just disaster. And one other point with the numbers, they talked about wage growth. Wage growth, they're saying, it's positive, 4.8%. But when you have 6% inflation, your wage growth is doing nothing.
No, it's absolutely.
So that's one factor. Another factor that bothers me significantly is they talk about savings rates. And Wells Fargo analysts yesterday talked about, we have a very significant higher savings rates. Well, part of that was because people didn't spend over the lockdown. But the other part of it is they're saving their money because they don't know what the heck's going to happen. And a lot of them are not going back to work. A lot of them not going back to the work numbers, according to the Wells Fargo analyst and Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census Bureau, are women. And they're not going to work because they've got to take care of their kids, because child care is a problem because of the vaccine mandates and some of these other issues, and because of the school problems that we have out there. People are staying at home with their children. And that's a percentage that is, not being factored in, people not considering what the impact of all these policies and regulations are doing to the economy and how much damage it's doing to the people that are at the lowest income levels, the service sector employees. Those are the people that are suffering the most under inflation. They're the ones that are suffering the most and losing their jobs, and in some cases can't go back to work or can't afford to go back to work. And part of that is the incentivization through these continued payments, government payments and subsidies. There's a lot of fear out there. There's a lot of bad decisions that are going on. There's a lot of bad policy being made, and a lot of people are very uncomfortable with it. So,
well, I tell you, last night was a perfect example of that. It's my buddy who owns this Italian restaurant. He's gone from being open 7 days a week. He's been in the business now for about 20 years. He said, I've never seen anything in my life like this, but he's gone from being open 7 days a week. He's now open 4 days a week. He's open now Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Sorry, 3 days a week, even worse. He said, you know, if I didn't do really, really well at my stores in Hawaii, etc., throughout my earlier career, the earlier part of my career, he said, we'd be starving right now. And we're trying to get people to help us, and we have absolutely no help whatsoever. Restaurants are closing down in our area. I don't know if you're noticing that or not, but it is just amazing. I went down to the hotel. It was virtually closed at 9 o'clock two nights ago. Just went down just to be able to spend some time looking at the water, and I couldn't even do that because the place was closing up early.
I'm seeing a lot of businesses closing down, ones that have been in business for a long time. They tried to fight their way through the lockdowns, the pandemic, but now I'm seeing a lot of open retail space. And of course, I'm watching the same thing. And this is, you know, anecdotally here locally, but I think it's the case in many of the blue lockdown states. And unfortunately, those are the most heavily populated states. And when you have governors like Jay Inslee, who comes out yesterday and says and starts hyping the Omicron variant, and then we're going to be proactive and start putting more lockdown procedures when he's got some of the strictest in the nation, and then actually says, we're going to do this regardless of where the science leads. You've got really kind of a tyrannical guy that has not allowed the legislator, and the people of Washington State are allowing this to continue, and the legislators are allowing this to continue. Absolutely dictatorial powers. There's no legislative actions in it. That's destroying the foundations of this nation.
Exactly.
The regime does the same thing. We're in
exactly
trouble.
Jimmy, we've got to take a real quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, give us 30 seconds. We're going to be right back with a guy who damn near died from COVID, your friend of mine, Dr. John Huber. He's going to tell us what his experience was, and he's going to mention one thing that you're going to find to be interesting. He was immunized. Stick around. Going to be right back. Hey, welcome in here to wrap up the KER report, political version, and it's all going to be politics for a while right now. I've got John Huber on the line. Dr. John is a very good friend of mine. He's been a regular guest on the show for nearly 5 years. John was double immunized, and he caught COVID, and he damn near died in the hospital. John, our listeners want to hear about that, please, sir.
Well, you know, my daughter went to her homecoming dance at her high school. She came back that night upset. You know, of course, his dad, I'm like, what's going on? She was upset because so many kids had actually gone to the dance sick. They weren't being responsible. And she was like, I'm going to get it. And of course she did. And then my son did, and my wife did, and then I did. They all handled it. It was like 5 days, 7 days apiece, and they were done. And one morning, Thursday morning, I was not feeling well. I'm working from home. So I just, you know, I had a couple hours. So I just turned the light out, curled back up. And I used the word, I just kind of tanked, you know, I just kind of, everything just fell out from underneath me and I couldn't breathe. And when I got to the doctor, they ran a few tests, and the next thing they said, okay, what hospital are you going to? So I went right from there to the hospital, and you know, that 7 days later, you know, the doc comes in and he's looking at me, and And I was feeling better. He came back the next day and he said, you know, I don't know how you're in recovery, but you're in recovery. You know, we honestly, he came and said, we honestly thought you were leaving through the morgue. You were so bad. We hadn't seen anybody that bad in 2 years that didn't go through the morgue. Kind of woke me up a little bit, you know?
Gentlemen, and, that kind of woke you up. What exactly was your reaction to that?
Oh, you want to know my reaction? Cried for about 4 hours, to be honest with you.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Johnny, let me ask you this. Tell me what they did to you in the hospital. Now, you were in intensive care for upwards of 2 weeks. What did they do to you?
Actually, I was in about 8 days, and they moved me to the next lower, actually to a regular room after that. What they did to me, first thing they did is give me a PICC line. And for people who don't know, it's like a mega IV, and it goes in. There's only a couple places they can give them to you. And they run the line all the way up until it just gets inside the heart. And then they pull that line back about a centimeter, and they give you really heavy duty drugs that way that would otherwise destroy your veins because they're, you know, really tough chemicals on the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started with, they loaded me up full of a huge dose of vancomycin, which is one of our last line of defenses for antibiotics. I know this because, you know, I have privileges at several hospitals you know, it's one of our drugs that when we give it to a patient, we can't let them go home. We have to give them the whole dosage, the whole, you know, prescription in the hospital before they leave because we don't want to lose that last line of drugs to patients not taking all their medication because it's a very valuable antibiotic. You know, they're that last line of defense. It's the heavy duty antibiotics. And then they started feeding me heavy-duty steroids that while I was in there.
Now, what's the purpose of that, John?
They were just trying to boost my immune system, and apparently it worked. I mean,
well, I know you had a lot of good wishes coming your way, too. So I guess what I really want to get across to the listeners is this is very serious. Now, you know, Jimmy is constantly saying that, and Jimmy is correct in my opinion, he's constantly saying that you really ought to think about the vaccines if you're aged. And he considers me to be aged because I am 78. He said, Al, don't screw around. He said, you know, do everything that you are comfortable doing and that your doctor is comfortable doing. And if you get sick, you really, at your age, need to immediately go and see a doctor. And Jimmy stresses on the show that, you know, the mortality rate of the COVID is right now less than 1%, and the less than the 1% of the people that die from it are people exactly in my category, you know, 78 years of age. I think the only place where I may be different is I may be a little bit healthier, but I don't know that for a fact. Now, what I find to be interesting, Johnny, and I would imagine you found it to be kind of interesting also, is that you were double vaccinated and you still got deathly ill. You didn't get a mild case of COVID-19. You got a big time case of it, even though you had the double vaccination.
Well, and I'm also in my early 50s, which, you know, they say, oh, it's really dangerous if you're 60 and above. And I'm here to say, if you're 50 and above, watch out for it. Because I didn't have any of the precursors. You know, I work out all the time, and you know, I'm not morbidly obese. I don't have diabetes.
Mm.
You know, I don't have any of the things that set you up to be vulnerable to the virus. So, I think I mentioned this to you off the air. My aunt's brother, actually, he was hospitalized with it, and he's in his 60s, and he was hospitalized for 2 months, and then they sent him to home health care, and he actually expired yesterday. Because of COVID.
No. Is that right?
And wow. They caused an embolism, and he died from that.
Well, that's something that goes along with some of the things that one of our regular listeners, Larry, is saying, actually. I guess what I want to say is, you know, when you have something like this, you got to be like, pretty much like Dr. John Huber, and that is you just got to make up your mind what you're going to do. Now, in terms of going to the hospital, you didn't have a choice. Your personal physician said, Johnny, you need to get in the hospital right now.
And she was right.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, that's your healthcare provider telling you that, you know. a lot of us, You know, we walked around, hey, you know, it's going to be a bad flu. It's going to be a bad this. It's bad that. You know, and it is for the majority of people. But if you're one of the people like myself who, you know, really gets it bad, mm-hmm. it's nothing like the flu. The first day, it felt like the flu, the first, you know, couple of days. And then when I tanked and I was out of it. And, you know, it's nothing like the flu at all. They released me on Tuesday. Monday, physical therapy came in for the first time because, you know, they wait until the virus is subsided a lot before people come in and work with you and stuff. And I couldn't even stand up next to the bed. I hit the ground, you know. So lucky, you know, I had some friends who are physicians and nurses and stuff, and they came up and made me do physical therapy that evening. And when the assessment came in the next day, I passed the assessment, mm-hmm. and I was healthy enough to go home. And the physical therapist was like, I just can't believe this, because yesterday you couldn't even stand there, and you just walked around the room. I mean, I was using a walker. But so they discharged me that Tuesday. My son came and got me, because lo and behold, Monday night, my wife was in a car accident, totaled our car and broke her arm.
Oh,
So we're both down for the count right now. We're doing much better though, both of us. And, you know, I'm not using a walker, and, you know, I'm weaning myself off of my last liter of oxygen. During the day yesterday, I did about 8 hours. The day before that, I did 4 hours without oxygen. And today, I don't know, it's pretty close to 8 hours without oxygen.
So I would assume that means that you're way over the top of the hill now. Is that correct?
I think so. You know, it's like I've been doing hyperbaric treatments. You know, there's a study out of New York University saying how that helps people's lungs repair itself much quicker. And I have a very good friend who's a physician who owns a hyperbaric treatment clinic. And, you know, it's experimental as far as the insurance is concerned. But
it works.
You know,
it works.
It works. It works. It's working for me. I'm probably, you know, I went and saw my doctor this week, and she was floored at how far along I'd come. And she expected, you know, probably 3 months before my lungs were back to normal. And, you know, I have a good friend who I went to high school with who was in the hospital for 2 months in ICU. And then he did 2 weeks in a rehabilitation facility, and he's home now. And he's been home for about 6 weeks, and he's still on 1 liter of oxygen. And I'm now, what is it? I came home Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So this is 10 days.
John, you're a healthy guy, and I thank God for the fact that you got through this thing okay. I'd like to get some comments from you, Larry, on this, if you would. I'm really not quite sure what to say other than thank God for God, John. Talk to you soon, bud.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.